This is Do Good and Do Well, the podcast for people who want to make a positive difference in the world without losing themselves in the process. I'm Sarah Fox, and in this podcast, I'll be sharing stories from social and creative entrepreneurs and leaders to help inspire you to do good and do well. Hello and welcome to Do Good and Do Well. This podcast is for founders and leaders of organisations aiming to be a force for good. We feature experts, tips and advice to increase positive social impact and improve personal well-being too, because this stuff is messy, hard and unpredictable. In today's episode, I'm sharing a live recording of the podcast we did as part of the Power of Women Thanet Festival in March 2023. The theme of the POW Festival this year was Rest, the Restival, and as soon as I heard that, I knew I wanted to be part of the conversation. So I'm going to stop talking so you can get right into it. Enjoy this panel discussion with myself, Annette Corbett, Rosie Wilby, and Bernadette Russell. Enjoy.
I'm going to introduce you into the wonderful world of Sarah Fox's podcast, which is called Do Good and Do Well. They're going to be talking about how we can rest and like how essential that is, but also how difficult that is. So I can't wait to listen. Hello, Sarah. Hi, hello. Everybody else. Have a gorgeous recording. And I will see you all after the recording.
Thank you, Ruby. Can everyone hear me okay? Checking in. Yeah. Thank you, Ruby. Yeah, I've really enjoyed the conversations that have happened this morning and all the yoga and loveliness. It's been really brilliant. And welcome everybody to this very special episode of Do Good and Do Well. My name is Sarah Fox, and I help people to increase their positive social impact in the world. And look after themselves in the process. So I do that in all kinds of ways, but mostly in my capacity as a coach. I will introduce the podcast in a second and my wonderful guests who you can see on the screen. But before I do that, I just wanted to invite you, if you are on YouTube or Facebook, come and say hello. It would be really nice to know who is watching and listening. Say hello to us. Let us know where you are in the world. And if at any point during this recording, you have any questions, any reflections, any ideas, then please do put those in the chat. We are in no way, and I'm sure everyone will agree with this, we are in no way experts on this idea of rest when we're trying to do good in the world. And we know that there are lots of thoughts out there, so we would love to hear them. So Do Good and Do Well is a podcast for people who really want to change the world for the better. They care about community and social justice. They care about equity and being kind and compassionate towards others. They have a strong sense of purpose and connection, and they don't want to break themselves in the process. And we wanted to record this as part of the POW Festival because I'm really curious about where rest lies in this desire to do good. You know, if you're an activist, if you're a carer, if you're a nurse, if you're a teacher, whatever it is, if you're wanting to do good for other people, how do you do that? And actually, how do we rest when there is so much good to be done in the world? And, you know, we only need to take a minute to think about what is going on in the world. It feels like it's literally and metaphorically burning at the moment. People being taken hostage, women, girls, families being murdered in Palestine. You know, is it okay for me to rest when all of that stuff is happening? Is it okay that I rest when people like Diane Abbott are being subjected to horrific racial abuse? You know, when there are thousands and thousands of homeless people on the street, is it okay for me to rest? You know, it feels like there's so much to be done. I don't think we're going to answer that question by the end of this episode, but we're going to give it a good go. And I'm so thankful to be joined today by three wonderful women who I am extraordinarily proud to be connected to. I'm going to invite them to introduce themselves so you can stop listening to me. So my question to you all is, please introduce yourself, tell us about yourself, where you are, and I'd love to know, for you, what are you curious about when it comes to this subject matter of rest? Rosie. Rosie Wilby, can we start with you?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, Sarah Fox. We're doing kind of formal full names. So it's been lovely to get to know you and appear on your podcast. And I suppose the reason that I've ended up appearing on that podcast is because through my work as a comedian and a performer and storyteller and author, I have been on a bit of a quest to spread a message of thinking about our relationships, our human relationships, our romantic relationships, sexual relationships, and friendships in sort of compassionate ways, and thinking about how we can still be kind to one another in an era of dating apps and Tinder and all these kind of weird and wonderful ways we meet and connect and hook up now. And I've sort of been unofficially named the Queen of Breakups, thanks to my book, The Breakup Monologues, which we have spoken about on the podcast in depth. And I think I'm really interested in how we can recover after breakups, after difficult events, after a friendship ending or some form of loss, and how that rest is really important in our recovery. And actually, it's during those periods of self-care and rest that actually we're becoming stronger, and we're sort of harnessing that bad experience and sort of transforming it and using it as a sort of fuel for a new chapter, for a good new start, for change.
Lovely, thank you, Rosie. Yeah, we'll get onto this in a sec, but we've been emailing each other in the last sort of week or so, and there is just so much to think about when it comes to rest and all of our work, and we'll get to that in a second. Bernadette, who are you? Tell us about what matters to you when it comes to rest.
Hello. Yes, my name's Bernadette Russell. I am, my background's sort of theatre and cabaret, and then I travelled from there to become an author and a kindness campaigner, which is a big sort of story behind that, and also a tree planter and a storyteller in the broadest sense of that. And I'm really interested in the subject of rest, because I'm considering and working myself on how we can manage to be restful when we just are in rather than waiting for an idyllic period in the future when everything will be, you know, there'll be a regular timetable as a freelancer, there'll be normal working hours, whatever that is, when we are super busy and we have deadlines, which I have quite a lot, how we can sew rest into those times rather than waiting for a mythical time in the future when everything will be nice and tidy and we've got like staff, which I don't have. So yeah, so I'm interested in that. I think it's really important.
Yeah, thank you. Annette.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here today. Thank you for inviting me. I describe myself as a clarity and leadership coach, which is a job title I kind of made up.
Why not?
But I'm a big fan of making up job titles, so I kind of feel okay with it. And it seems to fit with what I do. The way I describe my work is I help weary women in the performing arts to reignite the fire in their belly so they can lead with confidence, compassion, and calm. I kind of believe all three of those things should be possible, even if they don't feel like it. I used to be a legal PA. A long time ago, 16 years ago, actually almost to the month. And what I saw is people working like silly hours, but they were also making silly money. And then I kind of moved into the sector of the arts where I was still watching people work like silly hours. Money was maybe not, not quite so there. And I was just surrounded by these amazing women who went above and beyond to create really important work and really impactful work. And I was also watching these kind of burning out, getting really overwhelmed, I love how much word compassion has come up already today. They're being really compassionate to everyone around them, but not very compassionate to themselves. So a lot of my work is around how can you kind of tune back into yourself and listen to what you do, what you want and what you love, instead of always telling the stories of other people, actually, which is another culture that's already coming through. So now my focus is entirely on coaching and facilitation, still broadly in the creative sector. This whole topic really speaks to me because I think there's something around a conversation that you and I have had a lot, actually, Sarah, about this idea of how can we create these systems where we're moving away from this idea of like constant growth and productivity and recognizing the importance of spaces to just rest and reflect, and what, how do we need to shift the models for that to be possible?
Yeah, thank you. I think what you've all touched upon, there is something for me about how do we reimagine, how do we reimagine what all of this stuff could look like, so that rest isn't a privilege, an add-on, or, you know, a thing that we might get to at some point when I've finished my to-do list, I'll be able to rest. Like, what, you know, there are so many systems and structures that need to be dismantled and reimagined. So, you know, we'll give it a go, see if we can start today on this podcast. So I'm thinking about a sort of where rest shows up in the work that you do, and you've all touched upon that already. But I'd love to know, you know, that this idea of rest, or even not resting, you know, what are you noticing in the work that you're doing, in the context of your work? So if we start with Bernadette, we tell stories, we listen to stories, we kind of need that connection with others. Storytelling is firmly in our DNA, I think. And I wonder, with your work, like, do you notice any patterns or themes coming up in that idea of storytelling around this idea of, you know, how do you take rest in the face of adversity or changing the world?
Yeah, I thought that was such a good question, Sarah, when you messaged me with it earlier. It made me laugh because I was considering all kinds of stories, you know, classical myths, personal stories, epic, you know, Marvel type stories. And I was thinking, yeah, they're not really about rest, are they? Or if someone's resting, something dramatic happens, someone kicks the door down and have to get on with it. So I was considering that, and I thought, actually, what the many ways that you can tell and share stories, which is sort of infinite, and there are many different ways of describing yourself as a storyteller, what it actually invites is an opportunity to, they do invite an opportunity to rest, because whilst you're listening to somebody or watching or considering a story, you can just enjoy it. I think that's really valid, just as entertainment, or you can be invited to, or invite yourself to reflect. What would I do if I faced a dragon? What would I do if the witch in the wood gave me 7 challenges to do? What, you know, anything. So I think stories invite you to do that, and they can do it very metaphorically in a fantastical way, or very naturalistically. But I also think storytelling can teach us how to listen to ourselves, which is a kind of form of rest. Just listen to yourself. What's the story you're telling yourself? And also invites us to learn active listening. So we're really listening to other people. But yeah, mostly I was thinking, it's interesting, isn't it, how the stories that really thrill us and exciting and are prevalent are very action driven. They don't really involve long passages of people like getting pedicles. No. But, you know, yeah. Rosie, I think we should see to that.
Yeah.
Interesting, in a lot of classical folklore and sort of classical mythology, I was thinking what there are sort of journeys. So people are journeying, they're on really long journeys, which couldn't exactly be described as a rest, but could be described as reflective time. And another thing I just wanted to mention is, and I'm really in the thick of this, is the consideration of the heroine's journey versus the hero's journey, as expanded by Joseph Campbell. Wonderful Joseph Campbell, but it was obviously very sort of male perspective of what journeying through life means, and considering as women our journey in that sort of heroine's journey framework, and allowing ourselves in our story periods when we don't do anything, when we just rest, when we do sit up and have a pedicure, and the value of that, I think.
Yes, there's just so much in what you said. The thing that I just thought, my family really love the Marvel movies, and I was just thinking, you know, how dull would it be if suddenly everyone was like, we're not going to save the world, we're going to do a podcast about, you know, what it is to rest when we're kind of up against these evil. But yeah, I think that's an interesting point as well about what rest for that. I don't know if you can hear my dog, she's snoring. resting dog. Well, I've totally lost my point now, but yes, that kind of hero, heroine, the difference that's coming up there, and the fact that there aren't stories about rest, you know, that seems to be less of a theme about that. And so actually that's quite a big signifier of how we as a society think about it in the first place.
Or just to say, Sarah, is presented as kind of evil. So you often get baddies who make other people do work for them so they can rest.
They have the staff.
Like Baba Yaga, you know, there's lots of instances of wicked women or wicked folk making other people sweep up the embers or whatever it is. Yeah.
So the rest of the vampires in coffins and things.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that is a whole other podcast. Okay. Annette, your work with kind of weary women leaders. I love that phrase. Well, I don't love it, but I love it. You know, particularly in the art sector, that's definitely my bag as well. Having kind of lived in the art sector and the not-for-profit sector for a very long time. And seeing people who really care about what they do, they're really passionate, they love it, and in a way that connection to purpose is a form of rest, you know, we can think of it as that as well. But I'm just wondering, like, what are you noticing in your work about rest?
Well, it's funny, that weary word, literally I've only come up with it this year so it's very new, because I was trying to find the word that kind of sums it up, and I tested it at a conference in January, and every time I said to someone who was a woman in the arts and used the word weary, they were like, oh God, yeah, that's me. You can see like this physical reaction. And and I think it's entirely what you say, it's that connection with purpose where people just, all their energy is kind of expended outwards because they really believe in what they do. And they kind of forget to reserve any for themselves. And there's this sense that because I'm passionate about what I do, I'm going to make sure that everyone else is looked after. And yeah, there's something about, I feel like I'm so influenced by what you guys have said already that I'm going to go, oh, that's so exciting. There's so much to say. I actually use the heroine's journey in my coaching as well as a framework. And there's something in there about, there's a part in there about the refusal of the call. I think there's this layer of expectation on women in particular to do the work for everyone, and yeah, this sense of laziness being terrible, the word selfish being, oh my God, we can't ever be selfish, we have to be looking after everyone else all the time. And what I notice is there's this kind of like perfect storm of people who have a passion for what they do, and also with my clients I tend to see this kind of, I call it the three P's of people pleasing, perfectionism and plate spinning. Everywhere at once, literally, it's like we're doing everything for everyone else all the time, and how that impacts on their ability to do the work they want to do anyway. So it's like it's kind of counterintuitive. If they don't rest, they're not going to be able to do what they want to do.
It's making me think. I coach a lot of leaders, particularly head teachers. And one of the things we've talked about a lot, especially since the pandemic, is this, how do we, or what responsibility should we take for other people's well-being? And I sometimes think of it as a bit like health and safety. You know, if you do health and safety training and they say everyone in the room is responsible for health and safety, like if you see a bag in a corridor, don't wait for someone else to pick it up because we're all responsible. And I feel a bit like that with well-being as well, that we need to take personal responsibility of our own well-being as much as we can, given some of the things that are happening, systems and support others. But we can't take it as leaders. You can't take all of that responsibility for how other people are feeling, how other people are looking after themselves. Because as you say, ultimately, when do you then rest? When do you as a leader take a rest? Yeah, it's really, you know, what you were saying, there's so many, totally resonates with me.
I work with a lot of people who sort of producers as well. And that's, I think that job title is basically like professional people pleaser. It's basically you have to look after everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite liberating when you realise you don't have to be a people pleaser. I call myself a recovering people pleaser. I still, you know, at times take on that, you know, walk into a room and think, gosh, how is everyone else feeling? And I need, you know, and I want to kind of support that, make sure everyone's okay. But I do notice it more. Thank you, Annette. Rosie, what about you? Rest in your work.
Well, yeah, I've been thinking a lot about the cyclical nature of rest, because being a comedian and performer and writer who speaks about relationships, I think a lot about the cycles of a relationship when we go from, you know, the first blossoming of attraction and love through the sort of ups and downs of the middle stages of a relationship to the heartbreak and loss of the ending of a relationship, and then the sort of cycles, different stages of grief we might go through when something has ended, and then we go into a new beginning and sort of embark on the roller coaster again. And so to think about these sort of cycles a little bit, my book, I wrote the first half in a sort of backwards timeline and the second half in a forwards timeline to get this idea of the end of something always being the beginning of something new in this constant journey we're on. And the fact that, you know, these sort of lower moments when there's less happening in the story, it's not the big fight scene in the drama in the film, you know, or the big love scene or the big thing, the big climax, you know, these moments are when important things are happening and are being nurtured in ourselves. And I think the sort of cycles of creativity work very much in similar ways. I used to do Edinburgh Fringe as a comedian every year, and so everything would be geared around this ridiculously intense month during August when you're performing every day, and you would have had sort of previews and months of writing leading up to that, and then you just would have to sort of crash in September. It was like comedians' new year when everyone was run down and had the flu. And I just think we have to allow ourselves those periods of rest. My wife is actually a strength and conditioning coach for young tennis players. And she always says those moments of rest, both those sort of very brief moments after you've been lifting weights or doing something, but then the sort of longer periods of rest after you've done a training session, those are when the muscles are actually getting stronger. So that's a sort of very clear example of how we are growing and learning and developing in the ways that we need to when we rest from doing that activity. So when I'm writing, it's probably the moments when I'm out walking the dog, or I go and have a walk on the beach, or I go and swim in the sea in Margate, when actually more creativity is happening than when I'm sitting at the laptop screen sort of bashing out the things, the thoughts that I've had when I've been wandering and my mind has been a bit freer.
Yeah, definitely. That's the shower for me. Like just standing in the shower, that's when I have all my best ideas. I'm like, oh, how am I? I'm not never going to remember this. And also, it reminds me, I every week go to a spin class, which at the time is absolutely horrific. And I'm just trying to think of like how I'm going to survive. But it's a kind of half an hour class, and the instructor will say, there isn't much rest, but when there is rest, you really need to take it, because the rest is as important as the work. And I think of that throughout my whole week. The rest is as important as the work. I find it a really useful thing to remember. I don't think we need permission to rest. I think, you know, and we don't need to earn rest, but there is something about giving ourselves that permission and a kind of affirmation like that can be, or an affirmation, a kind of sentence like that can be helpful. Does anyone, we've got like a minute before we move on to the next section, because I'm really keeping an eye on time.
Also, just on the on the cyclical nature of rest, I also think we've got to touch on just the fact that as women, we become very accustomed to the idea of a cycle of feeling very active and very capable and together and focused and like a superhuman at certain times of the month, and then at other times of the month, really not. And that's whether you're still having periods every few weeks or whether you've moved into sort of perimenopause and menopause, and that is sort of less regular or is not happening. There is still a sense of these ebbs and flows. I mean, I'm on HRT now, so that is a whole whirlwind of stuff. And when I get to the 10, 11 days when I'm taking progesterone, I am way more tired and need way more rest.
I have Bernadette, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I really agree with that, with what Rosie said. And there's also this sort of wider, because I plant trees a lot and have done for many years. So I think there's a whole, and probably you've all had it when you've been out walking your dogs or wandering along the beach, but there's also that really deep realization that the apple tree isn't in blossom all of the year. Mm. You know, it's in blossom some of the year, and that fallow period, winter time, is really important. But also I was thinking about trees in relation to this, and I was thinking, although they do have periods when there's no leaves and they look like they're resting and they're fallow, they're actually really busy, a little bit like you in your shower, Sarah, and you in your swimming room. It's like the stuff still happens, it's just that there's time to let go of the leaves, just chill out. So I think nature sort of shows us that as well. There's a time, you know, nothing blossoms all year round, or not very many things blossom all year round.
Nourishing the roots, kind of sense of that before it all comes back out.
So we know all this logically. It's like we know it, we can intellectualize it, we can talk about it, but I'm wondering about how we really internalize it, or how we integrate this into our work. And I want to just move on to this idea of doing good and rest. You know, I heard on the ADHD and rest panel earlier, I think it was Rebecca Douglas talking about this is perimenopause, it's just totally gone out of my head. Could you tell that the thought was just like wandering? It's gone. Anyway, it will come back. Yeah, this idea that when you're at the forefront of something, when you really care about something and you're trying to influence and change and address, you know, it can be on this sort of global sense, social injustice and what's happening, or it can be very micro and community, and you're, you know, looking after your neighbour or even your family. When can we rest when we're trying to do that work? And I think someone's already mentioned that idea of if we rest then we might be seen as lazy. I often work with people who are they're high achievers. They feel safe when they're constantly doing stuff. That makes them feel safe in the world, achieving things, getting the next academic qualification and then the next, and doing the next course and the next course. And it's kind of, sometimes it feels a bit like a lie that we have to keep going and going and going, because if we don't keep going, what will happen? And if I think about my own life, I grew up working class background. My dad was disabled, often felt very, or not, he didn't feel excluded, he was excluded. You know, I had this really strong sense from a very early age about wanting to help people know that they belong. And so it's really personal for me, you know, this stuff of helping people to live a life that feels good, but also support, feels good for themselves, but also supports everyone else, you know, what's going on in the world, is important. It drives me. And there's no, I suppose there's no, it's not a coincidence that I ended up working for a housing association and then an arts charity, which was working on those kind of dodgy estates of what, you know, people would call where I live, that dodgy estate, that disadvantage. I ended up working on those for 15 years. A real sense of this drive. When you are someone who gives a shit about others, is it possible? Is it possible to rest? Tell me, what do you think? Annette, can we start with you?
Oh God, I don't know, Sarah. and I'm probably the worst person to speak on this in this week because I've got a cold because I pushed myself too hard through the beginning of March, and I'm like, I'm dosed up with paracetamol to keep me awake. I think. Oh wow! I've made the most important decisions in my life when I've been forced to stop. But I'm not sure that answers the question. Where, like, actually, when I was a legal PA, I broke my wrist. I had to take 6 weeks off, and that's when I realised I didn't give a shit about being a legal PA. And when we do, it is very difficult. We talked about permission. You have to give yourself permission to stop. Feels almost as if you're kind of neglecting the mission that you believe in. It feels like you're letting people down.
Mm-hmm.
And
sorry. that was my dog suddenly jumped down off the stool and she knocked her bone onto the floor.
Because she heard what Annette said and she was like, she I don't know either.
I think I've forgotten the question now.
Is it possible to rest when we are so truly connected to mm-hmm. wanting to do something good? And that we're, you know, I think often the people that I work with, they're also very, they're aware of really investigating that sense of what is good as well, you know, because I think we can think something is good, but doesn't mean that it is. In fact, it can do more harm than good. So there's a whole load of stuff that I think comes when you are someone who is driven to, you know, that you want to leave the world in a better place than you arrived. And the question is, you know, is it in your experiences as helpers, as change makers, as a business who, you know, wants to make a difference, is it possible to rest when there's so much to be done?
I think there's sort of, sorry, Annette, did I interrupt you?
No, I'll come back.
Are you sure?
Yes, I think I'm processing.
I just saw a couple of things in relation to your broken wrist actually and being forced to rest, because I did break and I got long COVID as a result of having COVID twice very quickly and then on the back of sort of 10 years of working 80 hours a week, and I'm not exaggerating. So what happened then, and I'm very much in the recovery end of that, though I did have it for 2 years. So what happened was I was like, oh, I just can't, I have to sleep longer, I have to rest now. And then I was thinking, and it's funny, isn't it? Like, if I said to you, Sarah, I can't speak to you for a bit because I'm doing transcendental meditation, you wouldn't say to me, oh, that's so lazy, that transcendental meditation. But if I just said to you, I'm just sitting down, I'm going to have a cup of tea, you know, so some of it was about fooling myself. I had to say, look, rest is part of the work. And actually using those words to separate it for me wasn't that useful, in the way that for me, separating life and work as words isn't that useful. It's all work or it's all life. And the rest is part of the work was how I recovered from being so ill. You know, I had to really adjust to being incredibly energetic, to being not really being able to move very much. And thankfully, I'm a lot better now. But I only got better by resting and sewing that properly into my day and seeing it as part of the work. And it is, because as I think everybody said, when I'm walking around in the woods or when I'm by the river resting or having some time off, that's when I get ideas or I find solutions. So I started thinking, actually, I don't think it's that separate, really. I don't think life and work's that separate. Mm. That's not useful for me. I don't think rest and work is that separate. It's all part of my practice. So I persuaded myself, and I had to be honest, I'm not particularly proud of that, but I had to, by thinking rest is part of my practice and I have to model that behavior, because I have to, and I've included it in when I'm telling stories or encouraging people to tell their stories. It's like, your holidays stories are great stories. Your jumping in puddles encourages other people to, gives people permission to jump in puddles. So if we model that, and when I get advice or I'm working with somebody, I do pay attention to if they seem to be the sort of person that makes sure they have a chance to have fun. And it makes me feel a little bit easier. Yeah. I hope that made sense.
Yeah. So that fun piece, I think that is a form of rest, I think, especially when the work that you can be doing is so intense and, you know, impactful. It's, you know, as a coach, and I'm, you know, Annette, you're probably the same. Like, I need to make sure that I'm able to hold a space for my clients, and that means that I, you know, ideally need to be rested, but also that I have things like supervision where I can go and talk about some of the things that are happening in those spaces to kind of let go. That for me is a form of rest, to be able to let go of some of the stuff that I might be holding. Rosie, Annette, anything else to add on that? Is it possible?
Yeah, I think. I mean, I'm sorry to hear about Bernadette's experience of long COVID. I had COVID a couple of times and it was awful. Mm. Although the sort of, if you like, kind of weirdly positive side of the pandemic for me was it did force me to reassess my schedules, my working day and how I worked, because previously to that, I had juggled so many different things as a comedian, gigging around the world all the time and performing and writing talks and shows and articles and working as a freelance journalist and writing books and doing so many different things and constantly juggling them. Whereas obviously during the first lockdown, I was writing the breakup monologues and all my events were cancelled, which was devastating at first and really scary. But actually it made me just focus on one thing. And I mean, I'm grateful that I had that thing. I had been asked by a publisher to write a book. So I was fortunate in that sense that I had a small advance and I had a little bit of money coming in and not quite that terrible fear that many people had that, you know, particularly freelancers who weren't protected by some of the same things that employed people were. I didn't have some of those same fears, but I did sort of realize how much I loved writing outdoors and having that freedom to sort of, you know, take the dog out into the park and let ideas flourish and flow. And it was a very different kind of day and routine for me. And I wish in many ways that we had all learned more from those times and held on to some of that lockdown spirit, even though obviously it was for terrible reasons that our lives were so transformed for that period of time in 2020. But I do think there were some positive lessons we could have taken, but it feels like in many ways we've just allowed Zoom and all these platforms we have now to be able to communicate and sort of be in each other's lives constantly 24/7. We've sort of allowed the technology to make us even busier in a way, because we're always on a Zoom or a FaceTime or we're always on a phone call or a, you know, Skyping or whatever it is, you know, always on social media. And we seem to have escalated even more as a reaction to the pandemic, whereas I feel like we could have held on to some of those, the good parts of that terrible time in the world and how we were all baking banana bread. And it sort of became a bit of a joke, but actually I really enjoyed baking banana bread. It was great. It was quite comforting at that sort of very strange time in my life. And I also think, Sarah, I know what you're saying about how it feels hard to let go of that sort of mission that you have all the time. For me, it's really been about representation of the LGBTQ community and writing inclusively about relationships. And, you know, all the time I read books about relationships that are sort of written from such a heteronormative point of view, with sweeping disclaimers at the beginning of them about how, you know, I'm talking about relationships between a man and a woman, but we'll assume all those other relationships work just the same. And so all the time I get frustrated and I get annoyed by that, and I don't feel seen. And I know that all my friends, all my community, all the people who've supported my shows over the years, so many of them don't feel seen and don't feel represented as well. And it's hard to sort of let go of that frustration and, you know, not want to keep always doing things. You know, I do tons of you know, shows for free for brilliant LGBT charities and so on. And, you know, I have to sort of balance that carefully. But it is tough, isn't it, when you have a mission that you feel so passionately about? How do you give yourself that permission? But you have to, or else, you know, you are going to burn out and not be effective at doing the thing that you need to do.
And you have to also, so it allows other people to. I think we can persuade ourselves by thinking, well, it's modelling sort of good practice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the pandemic was a really interesting kind of inflection point, and particularly for my clients, they were already weary, but now it's like weary with a capital W. There's this sense that there was all this talk about, we recognise the system's not working, we need to change something. And there was a lot said about it, and then we've come back and as you say, we've kind of slipped back into old habits, and Zoom has become this kind of ever-present way of meeting where we don't necessarily have spaces between meetings as well. We don't have that natural downtime of walking from one meeting room to another, or getting a cup of tea, having a random...
Driving,
And I think that's part of why
it's true.
Where kind of weariness has come back.
Mm.
And I wanted to talk as well, like, the creativity at rest that Bernadette picks up on. It's like I'm most creative when I go for a walk. I moved down to the South Coast last May. I live near Hastings, and my morning and evening commute, because I work from home, is I go for a walk by the sea. Mm-hmm. And there are so many of my social media posts of me with my my phone up to my face with my hat on, because that's where the idea has come. It's that different kind of rest.
It is. Yeah, we're going to come on to kind of ways to rest in a second, but we've had a couple of questions, which is very exciting, and we'd love more. Okay, the first one, this is a biggie. Okay, you ready? How can we overthrow the cultural norm that equates busyness with success? So we had a bit of a conversation about this in email, didn't we, about that. You know, the glamour of busyness, but actually I think this is about, you know, when people look at you and they see you're busy, particularly on social media. I think, you know, if you're posting and people say to me, like, wow, business looks like it's going really great because of what they're seeing on Instagram, and it kind of is sometimes and it kind of isn't and other times. And so, yeah, any thoughts on this idea of how we overthrow that cultural norm?
It's so interesting, because I often think if someone's got so much time to post on social media that maybe they haven't got a lot of stuff going on. Actually, when I'm doing the really exciting and interesting creative work, like I made myself write a novel, and I've never written a novel. I've always written nonfiction. But I made myself write a novel from September through to the end of January, because I entered a competition and I've got through to the next stage of that competition. And so that was really exciting. And I used that as a bit of an incentive to do it. But because I had a short timeline to write a full book, I really wasn't doing much social media, and I felt very invisible. I felt very insecure. I felt anxious. I could, when I did quickly look on it and maybe post something, a little quick story or something, I felt like all my friends, all my fellow comedians and peers were doing so much stuff. But I thought, but I'm doing something really great that I'm going to be able to, I hope, shout about in the future. And it's something I can actually feel way more proud of myself, I guess, if that sounds okay to say.
Because you are allowed to say that.
I'm proud of myself. I do the thing. But if I feel that's more of an achievement than sort of, you know, keeping on posting on Instagram every day. Yeah, I had a couple of months where I really didn't do any Instagram posts. And I still look at my feed and go, oh, there was a real gap, wasn't there? But it's fine, you know, but it's hard, isn't it? Because I think social media is a big part of why we really have pornified busyness, busy lives.
Mm. It's worth asking ourselves, I think, often what we're using social media for, which can change, because sometimes it's just to like have a nice chat. Sometimes it's to you feel obliged to, or you want to kind of share what you're doing or tell your particular story. And that feels like it's changed recently to me. That feels like it's sort of changed. And also, it kind of is a marketing tool. So I think if you're freelance, you're running a small business, there isn't really much option there. But it does encourage the cult of busyness. And I've certainly had, I've literally put, I'm not really doing anything. And people have sent me messages saying they're really worried about me. I'm like, no, I'm fine. I'm sort of taking the dog to Greenwich. It's, yeah, so I think it's to do with, constantly feeling like we have to be productive. Mm-hmm. What I said earlier about saying, if I say I'm doing transcendental meditation, that's allowed, isn't it? Because that's doing a thing. But if I said, oh, I'm just walking around Lewisham, that's not the same. So I think we have to take responsibility for itself. I'm not saying that it's our entire responsibility, but I think you have to sort of think in terms of social media, think, what am I using it for? Why am I using it? And how is it affecting me? And also, don't feel that you have to tell the story that you're busy all the time. Mm. Let's have the courage to tell a different story of ourselves and about each other, and not tell that story, because that's the only way it's going to change, really.
Yeah, I think it comes back to modelling behaviour, doesn't it? What we were talking about. It's like I now run my own business. If I'm going to be my own boss, I don't want to be a shitty boss. I want to give myself like decent hours and time off.
Yes. And a pay rise every 6 weeks.
I've got to tell you, I invented a boss because I haven't got, it's just me as it is, I know, with all this. So I invented this boss called Mrs. Mingle. Mrs. Mingle is me, but I shouldn't have told you that because she thinks she's real. And Mrs. Mingle's quite strict, but she does make sure that I have proper breaks.
So the answer to the question about how we overthrow is that we need Mrs. Mingle.
Mrs. Mingle.
But that it's always with these questions, isn't it? There are big systemic issues. You know, how we overthrow is probably reimagining the entire world and moving away from the capitalist society.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, capitalism is a big thing, isn't it? Just picking up on Mrs. Mingle, I realised that when I was a musician and I was touring with another artist, we invented Ali, who was our tour manager. And the problem was that Ali was so lovely and kind and generous and sort of gave everyone, you know, nice sort of, yes, time off or whatever, that people who were working with us wanted to work with Ali and they wanted to meet her. So we were wondering how we would sort of appear in different hats or disguises to actually be Ali, this kind of fictional, sort of wonderful person.
That's brilliant. I'm going to move us on a little bit because we've got a couple more questions, and you know, next podcast, fictional characters in our mind, invisible friends, help us rest. So I think one of the sessions after this recording, our podcast today, is that Everyday Racism is sharing, very generously sharing, the talk that they did with Tricia Hersey, which I watched and is really great. So I would totally recommend staying around for that. It was amazing. And she, you know, I've got her book here, actually. Rest is Resistance. And I just wanted to share a sentence that I highlighted and did all sorts of things. I use it quite a lot. But she said, or says, rest is radical because it disrupts the lie that we are not doing enough. It shouts, no, that is a lie. I am enough. I am worthy now and always because I am here. And I suppose to finish off the podcast, and I will, I know we have got a couple of questions. I'd love for you to share what rest looks like for you. We've kind of picked up on it already, but there's a researcher called Saundra Dalton Smith, and she talks about 7 different ways of resting, because I think we can often feel like rest is napping or sleeping, and that can be quite, doesn't always work, it can be quite difficult. So she talks about mental rest and emotional rest and social rest. So I know that I am often in this room staring at a screen with clients or not, and sometimes I need to be face to face with people and have a cup of coffee. To me, that's a social form of rest, seeing people in real life. And or it can be the opposite. Sometimes I've feel like I've overstimulated on people, my, you know, clients, my family, my children, and I need disconnection. So given this idea of rest as resistance, given the you know, thinking about what we've talked about today, what does rest look like for you? And if you could kind of keep it fairly succinct, because I want to get to the questions as well. Annette, do you want to go first?
For me, it's so dependent on what kind of rest I need, which is kind of like an answer, but it's, I think rest in sort of formal way of like meditation or yoga, or, you know, those things that we sort of automatically reach for, sometimes that can feel like a chore, sometimes it needs to be something completely different. I love a dance break. If I've got like 3 minutes between me, I'll have a dance around my home office. Or we were talking about,
can you demonstrate?
Or horror films. I find them really restful, bizarrely. So I think it's almost like having this grab bag of like, if I've got 2 seconds, it's taking a deep breath. If I've got 2 minutes, it's a dance. If I've got 2 hours, then it's watching a horror movie. It's about that sense of kind of listening to yourself and what you need.
Yeah.
I was thinking, actually, something just popped into my head quite random. I can't remember what the advert is. You're not yourself when you're hungry. You're not yourself when you're tired. I think it's like Snickers or something. I'm not sure.
Rosie, Bernadette?
Yeah. Oh.
mental rest.
I mentioned swimming, which is definitely a very restful activity for me. Also, I think time with my pets. We've got a dog and a cat, and really sort of engaging with them and playing with them is just incredibly restful, because, well, animals are just incredible, and it's a break from sort of the stresses and strains of human relationships and human connection. Because, I mean, the cat can be a bit a bit demanding, a bit she decides when she wants cuddles, but the dog, there's sort of unconditional love on tap there, really. So it's whenever you want an amazing cuddle and just a play with a good old toy that you want to throw around for her, she will always engage with that. So I think that's brilliant. I also particularly love podcasts, and just listening to lots of different podcasts. So, you know, including yours, Sarah, although yours isn't one of the ones that sends me to sleep.
I think that's a good thing. Bernadette, I'm going to ask you the same question, but also there's another one. There's another question here that says, I feel guilty for taking time to rest, especially when there's a strong drive to be productive. How do you navigate the guilt? I feel like you'll be able to answer this.
Thank you. I love all the things, the cats and dogs, the horror and the dancing. I'm just going to agree with all of those and the podcast. So I hear the person that said that. I try to probably not really explain it earlier. I've stopped thinking about things in terms of rest and work, or even life and work. And so it's all part of one thing. So it feels a little bit more holistic. So, for example, I'll thread in breaks throughout the day. I'm doing very long days at the moment. I'm just making sure, because of Mrs. Mingle, that I take these breaks. Mm-hmm. And I'll go outside and I'll walk. I'm near a wildlife reserve and also some very beautiful parks and the river. So I walk. And actually, the reason I don't feel guilty about that is invariably, as everybody said, work is going on. Because work goes on when you're asleep, when you're dreaming, when you're swimming, when you're walking, so in a way, not to set out to have a rest in order to continue work, but with the knowledge that we're connected, we're not disconnected from our imaginations and our thought processes. Mm-hmm. We're always being, we're always alive. And so that sort of persuaded me and stopped me feeling guilty.
Mm. I think, because I think guilt shows up so often, you know, particularly in my work with freelancers, change makers around like money. Like often it'll be like, well, I don't want to up my rate because I feel guilty because they're a charity or they don't have enough funding, or I don't want to, you know, there's guilt in so many places. And I think for me, I don't know if it's my age or something has happened where I've kind of felt a bit resentful that there was this constant feeling of guilt, you know, as a parent working, running my own business, really wanting to grow that and do amazing things. And then also at some point see my children and, like, you know, do things with them. And I just thought, in a way, it's up to me to let go of it. And I know I don't mean that to... It sounds really easy, doesn't it, when you say it? But I kind of just thought, oh, I've just like had enough of the guilt around this stuff. So actually, the guilt isn't working. It doesn't make anything any better or you know, it doesn't help. So I'm just going to like tell it to go away.
Yeah, and if you think about it, there's that saying, I'm going to misquote it, but... Your unhappiness will not make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. You know, your tiredness will not make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. Your sadness will not make the world a better place. But your happiness and your restfulness and your peace, they will, because you are in the world as a happier, more rested, more peaceful person. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I'm going to start to draw everything to a close. And I did tell the panel earlier that I had a very coachy question, which is about, you know, what they commit to in terms of their rest. But actually, there's a question that we've had, which I think would be an amazing question to end on. So if we can kind of keep it quick, if you could instantly transmit one message about the importance of rest to every person on earth, what would it be and why? That's a great question. If you could instantly transmit one message about the importance of rest to every person on earth, what would it be and why? Who would like to start?
I'll start.
Go on, Bernadette.
When you are rested, you can re-engage with the world as the best version of yourself, the most happiest, the most peaceful, the most well-rested. And therefore, by being that rested version of yourself, you will, just by virtue of that, make the world a better place.
Mm. Amazing.
Well done. And I mean, perhaps by extension, we also can think about, you know, resting the earth, you know, resting nature, and how we, you know, are constantly trying to sort of you know, do things, make things, and you know, sort of resting our environment in some ways, and how we don't need to sort of constantly be building buildings and changing the landscape. And sometimes it's okay if things sort of collapse and decay, and maybe they're beautiful too.
Because there is so much to be done is precisely why we have to rest. Because when we're fully resourced, when we're rested, we are so much more powerful and so much more creative, and all the activism that we want to deliver is 10 times better.
Yeah. I would just add that one of the questions I will often ask clients is to kind of get them to think about when they're 90, 95, 100, sitting on a park bench, and they're looking back at their life, or they're telling the story of their life, you know, what is it you really want to say? And is it a long list of your achievements and your successes and all the things you did? Or is it that you had a happy, content, restful life that also made a difference in some way? So yeah, to kind of do that forward thinking, looking back. Thank you, everybody. A reminder that this podcast will be released in a couple of weeks when I find some time to edit and get it out in the world. And you can find it wherever you listen to your podcast. You can just Google or whatever, do good and do well, and click the follow and subscribe button. You can find me all over the place, but I mostly hang out on LinkedIn. I'm really loving LinkedIn at the moment. So come and find me there. Thank you. And a massive thank you to Lisa for being an interpreter today. Thank you to Powell for organising a brilliant digital day, a brilliant restival. I hope that you have enjoyed yourself. Thank you for sharing your time with us this afternoon. Thank you, Annette Corbett, Bernadette Russell, and Rosie Willoughby. It's been an absolute pleasure. Look after yourselves.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. That was incredible. Oh my goodness. I loved it. Oh. All of the stuff in there about like contentment, and that is something that we can be striving for in our lives, as well as action and change, is beautiful. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate you sharing your time with us. And again, a massive thank you to Power of Women Thanet. They were incredible and really supportive. If you enjoyed this episode, if you enjoy the podcast, please do go rate and review, share with a fellow leader or founder, and or pop over to LinkedIn. That's where I usually hang out. Come and find me. It's @SarahFoxCoach. Take very good care.